Welcome to OpenHive.js, our podcast on all things JavaScript with Nearform guests. I'm James Snell, and I'm joined today by my colleague Matteo Colina and our guest Charlie Robbins to discuss whatever's on Charlie's mind and a number of things about JavaScript and TypeScript and some of the history of Node.js and where things are going. So hello, Charlie.
Hey, how's it going?
Hi, Charlie.
Good to see you, man.
Would you like to introduce yourself? We know you very well. We have traveled the world with you for a few times already, but our guests might not know the fantastic part you played in Node lore.
Yeah, I've been sleeping the last couple of years. Had some things that I needed to take care of. So I am, I guess, the last person in sort of the original Node cohort of contributors from 2009, 2010 that is still active at all in Node itself. And I'm not active in the project. I'm on the board of the OpenJS Foundation. At the time, I ran a company called Nojitsu for about 5 years that was acquired by GoDaddy, where I still work. I run a number of teams, including the design system, shared wayfinding, engineering rigor, the open source programs office, and some of our sort of nascent merchandising front end things. So kind of all things JavaScript and open source, but that's maybe a little bit too broad, but that's an easy sum up. And for those listening, I'll never have a Wikipedia page, but if you go to the Wikipedia page for isomorphic JavaScript, it's pretty much my like one notable contribution to the world is that I thought that was a good term, I wrote a blog post about it, and that if you had told me that would have the staying power that it has had today, I would have laughed you out of the room 10 years ago when I wrote it.
Well, I didn't know it was you that created the term. I've learned something new.
So yeah, no, it's funny. I had I was with Michael Jackson and Spike Brehm from Airbnb, because really it was like not so much, okay, I wrote a blog post, but then Spike wrote another blog post about how they were using it at Airbnb. And in the middle of it, he's like, and this thing, which Charlie totally coined and made up over here, which in like the citation was the one that was like, okay, well now they're like attributed to me forever. But I'm kind of a math geek, and I thought it was a neat way to use the term isomorphism. And, many people disagree with me, and they are more than welcome to disagree with me.
It's always funny, those things that we're not quite, they're kind of a throwaway kind of thing, or one thing we just come up once, and then 10 years later it's like suddenly become a thing.
Well, it was an important thing at the time for me, because my background, I was actually on the WPF team at Microsoft when I was an intern, 15 years ago, and then I did WPF in industry for my first 4 or 5 years of my career, and largely that was during the recession, and there were all these single dealer platform. So think of a trader with eight monitors, and they want to arrange all the windows. And that was my jam. I built 5 or 6 of those systems. And by the fourth or fifth one, I was like, I think that this technology is fundamentally flawed and is not going to work. And I was all in, right? I was on the team. I was I don't want to say zealot, but I was all in, this is the way things I think are going to head. And coming to that conclusion, this is just not going to work. It was okay, well then Flash and Flex are going to die. And this is 2009. This is before Flash was going to die because Apple, cut it out of the iPhone. But Flex, it was a similar XML-based markup on top of ActionScript 3, actually. And then, so that's going to die. Silverlight's going to die. All of these things that all of the large enterprises are saying are going to be the future are going to die. And so this thing that I've never used, don't believe in, and think is kind of lousy, called JavaScript, which is my thought process at the beginning of 2009, that's going to take over like gangbusters, because there's nothing else that's going to win. And while I was doing all this bank work, they all ate up the idea of writing one language, right? Because they were already writing all this C# and .NET for their backends, and they loved the idea of hiring one skill set. So here comes along this crazy idea that everyone thinks is insane, called Node, server-side JavaScript, and that's going to be gigantic. So let's go bet the whole career on that, bet the farm, all in, quit my job, because right away that was just okay, that's where it's at, that's what's going to happen. That's my whole thought process. So that idea of isomorphic JavaScript grew out of this, they really just want one skill set that works everywhere, and you want kind of one code base that works everywhere.
Yeah, and we're seeing a lot of that, seeing a continued push on that today with, you know, the ask to implement web platform APIs in Node, right? Things like Fetch API or Blob or, you know, files. I mean, there's a ton of these APIs that exist in the browsers that don't exist in Node today.
Streams is the canonical example that I like, because the, you know, I won't name names, but like, you know, there is a community of people that do this work. And like some people that were involved in Node Streams also were involved in WhatWig Streams. And like, they have ideas about how those are supposed to work. And like, Node was strongly in the anti-promises camp for a really long time, for good reason, in my opinion, because I would like a stack trace, please. Like, can I have a normal, like, all, I have no issue with promises today. There's fastest callbacks and you get a stack trace. Those are pretty reasonable gripes. I'd like a nice stack trace and it's slow. Like, I don't, it's not like, oh, I hate the API, I hate the ideas. Like, they're not as efficient and I'm trying to write fast programs. And so we're like layering on language features almost in some places, in this case, async iteration, to read from both. You can take a WhatWig stream and you can take a Node stream and you can, you know, get the async iterator for its read function. And it works, but that's not going to be universal, I think, as a case. So I'm not surprised that there's a lot of pressure to implement the web APIs.
So it is the fun story about here, okay? I, from my talking to people unofficially, almost no one uses the streaming functions in Fetch. Like the 99.9% of the usage is doing a simple get request or post request and get a JSON back.
Unless we use it a bit, and like we were also one of the folks who you probably know who I've worked with for now a decade. He was at Nojitsu. He's still with us at GoDaddy. Arnout. He was such a, like, it's not abortable. Like, it's not, I can't abort the Fetch. So how can I do all these things? Because he does really advanced networking stuff. And
yep,
I agree with you though. It's edge cases, but for the people who are really writing, like, I guess the high performance software isn't the right word, but like the full featured software systems, like those edge cases, really, they have to jump through hoops to work around them.
Well, there's people that just, they exist in the edge case, right? I mean, that is their whole world.
Yeah, I understand, but the big push right now, or the big question marks that we are getting from Node, are from the 80% use case.
You can go through something with the best of intentions and say, like, we have learned from this and we're going to change our approach. And, you know, that requires all the good consensus seeking with TSC and folks, but especially in that group, because of its sort of BDFL history, there has been a tendency to calcify around ideas that were from those eras and then later on, without sort of revisiting them on first principles. And I don't need to call out any of them. I think both of you are sort of aware, but it's almost like a, you know, I think a psychology PhD would have a field day with sort of like studying projects that transition from BDFLs to open governance, and when things, you know, how the group dynamic works. Because everyone, I think, is operating in the best of intentions. I don't think it's the result of bad actors. I think it's just some people are like, well, we solved this problem. Why are we even talking about it anymore? And it's like, well, because there's new data and the world has changed and et cetera, et cetera.
I'd have a great honestly, you know, particularly with a lot of the processes for Node, you know, a lot of the things that we put in place for governance right after the transition from that BDFL model into the open governance actually don't necessarily make sense today. In fact, if we look back on it in retrospect, they're almost an overcorrection, which sometimes you have to overcorrect if you're trying to get a car back onto the road, right? Because you're steering off, you have to overcorrect and get back on before you keep going straight. So a lot of these processes and decisions and all these things have to be revisited as you go, rather than, oh, we solved that, now we're moving on.
There is also, you know, James, on some of the stuff, there is also the problem. This is a question mark, okay? And I'm going to put two things out, to say two problems out loud. The first one is, how much can we break? So one of those key questions is, how much can we break our users? Like, a significant chunk of the Node penetration on the web and on the platform is related to it's almost everywhere. And it's how much can we break our users? Like, this is a generic question, because I can name a few modules built into the early days of Node that if we need to do any innovation whatsoever in, for example, the HTTP layer, they would break. In fact, like, a key example of this is Express. Express cannot support HTTP 2 because it's so tied to the HTTP 1. It's monkey patches core to do this what it's doing. We just need to break everybody, okay?
Well, putting on my OpenJS hat for a moment, right? Like, I think the Express question in and of itself is an interesting inter-project open governance conversation to have. And I don't know if it's still mostly Doug working on it. We mostly use Fastify now, so thank you.
Please contribute, man. You know,
dude, I haven't written open source code in so long. Like,
your teams, man. You have a lot of people reporting to you now.
I think we have. I think we've submitted a patch or two. Like, I can't recall. Like, but you've named the $1 million question, or really, I guess, in this day and time, the $1 billion question of how much can you break people. And then what is the release process by which you can do that, especially when you're constrained as a open source project with limited resources? And one of the things I find in my inbox all the time, being a relatively, you know, followed and prolific, although not so much in the last 2 or 3 years, open source person, is computer science and software engineering PhDs reaching out to me to do this survey work. And I wonder if there's a way to tap that, you know, knowledge set to try and answer some of those questions in an academic way, and, you know, really try and get some more talent in an experimental branch or an experimental release line. Because
I think that, yeah, I can see the value of that. Well, just one thing that I look at it a slightly different way. So, if you look at all the, you know, Internet Explorer versions, you know, IE11 and earlier, there was a ton of APIs there that developers could use that would only work in that browser. They would only work in that environment, right? And all of that code doesn't work today because those APIs aren't standard. They weren't common across all the different platforms. And we don't worry today. We don't sit here and bellyache and scratch our heads over, you know, all that broken code out there. It's just, you know, those developers have been given a reason to move on. And it's okay to break that code. And then, you know, compare that today with the differences between, we have some APIs that work a particular way only in Node, right? Where you have the web platform or Dino or some of these other, you know, other things, you know, they're implementing these other standard APIs where it is actually isomorphic and you can use them in multiple environments. Should we necessarily care so much about breaking something that only works in Node if we're going to some, you know, if we're moving in the direction towards standards? From moving in direction towards isomorphism?
It's an interesting call out. I mean, do you, like, you guys know Ryan pretty well, right?
No, not really. I just met him once, to be honest.
You can watch his talk from the most recent one when he talks about Dino at, I'm sure he's given many since the JSConf EU one, but the earlier talks about how he got to Node sort of speaks to the kind of thinking that Ryan has, because he dropped out of a mathematics PhD to do this work. And in the earlier talks he would give, he'd be like, well, I tried it in all these, you know, appropriate languages and it failed for these reasons, you know, Python, Ruby, C++, you know, etc. And like, it just didn't work for these reasons. And I did not think that, like, JavaScript was like his last resort. Like, it was not his first choice because he values correctness so much. And that, I think, has been instilled a lot in sort of Node core. Like, we want to do it the right way. There's this value on correctness. And you see that sort of even more so in Dino, of like, the correct way is the web platform. And I based on where we were when Node started, because right, ES5 ships in what, 2008, 2009? I'm trying to remember the exact time, but it's really just before Node comes into being. We get ES5, and the CommonJS is not just require, right? Like there's this whole set of things that anybody who talks about it, you know, go talk to like Chris Kowal and like all of the Rhino people, right? Because Rhino predates all of that, which is where like Bloomberg was a huge Node user from early on, because they were a huge Rhino user from like years and years prior. They were trying to build on the standards of the day that they had, right? And because those standards didn't exist for a lot of this stuff, they just made stuff. And I think if you're going to sort of honor the original intentions of the project, you're seeing that in Dino. And I understand the software maintenance problem of we have this huge ecosystem, it's been 10 years. But I think if you set up, you know, sort of stake in the ground of like 5 years from now, these will all go away. Like just set an enormously far out timeline, but make a big announcement about how all of these APIs are going away. They're going to be replaced with their standard counterparts, but set it a time far enough away that everyone's like, oh yeah, but I don't have to worry about that now. Like, yeah, that makes sense. That's accurate. And then work backwards from there. And this, I think, speaks to one of the challenges in open source that I've lamented as I've sort of grown in my career. Like I'm more like I hate the term, but like architect and product manager, a technical product manager, than I am like an engineer anymore. But that's how you work backwards from there, because we all know where we want to go. We just got to sell it and map it out so that people can predict when those APIs are going to go away and what they can do.
To make an example, okay, we are so blocked by all the ecosystem that we are almost down to re-implementing. I've started a long time ago, like 3 years ago, but this took momentum only recently, because as all good things, it needs to mature, because all good ideas needs to mature a little bit too before people start, you know, intrigued by the idea. That I need to was rewriting the HTTP stack, the HTTP client in Node from scratch, essentially from the parser, like taking the parser and then like the parser is done, but then the HTTP parser is done, but or essentially removing all the craft that was in the Node core HTTP implementation that is so problematic. And in the end, the only way to sane way to do this without, you know, being hampered by the problem, by the project, essentially, by not breaking some people, was to do it as a ecosystem module. And very soon, I am like, I probably, when this goes out, it might have already been landed. We are even going to not use Node Core HTTP parser anymore directly and move it to WASM, improving performance in the process.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's always the, I mean, so Fedora was like our third employee at Nojitsu. So I have like a
so
lot of...
So essentially that, you know, taking Fedora's code that we currently bundle as a native add-on, using
right,
it via WASM.
You don't cross the boundary. You don't have to marshal, right? So you stay
you
in
see,
Java.
And it's phenomenal, okay? Yeah. And improving the performance in the process, early benchmark shows that the WASM implementation is actually faster than the C++ things that we bundle. So overall, it's what I'm saying is, by the way, I'm talking about Undici, so it's one of my pet things. And but those type of shipping those APIs on top inside the current Node Core database, Node Core GitHub organization, it's incredibly hard.
Well, I mean, this is kind of where I was driving to, is that, you know, can you come up with a model that the focus is developer experience, right? Like, who cares if you break all these projects if you have a very low bar? Like, let's play a thought experiment out where you're going to break the ecosystem in a material way, and all they have to do is press a button and then they're fixed. Would you do it?
Me personally, yes. Knowing full well that I'm going to get, you know, 100 people yelling at me for, you know, how dare I make, you know, make something that works suddenly stop working.
How dare you, Mr. Spacely, make me press the button? But like, literally, I'm talking about if you just press a button.
It's not going to be just press the button.
Right, but I'm saying like, that's why it's a thought experiment, because if you say yes to that, then all we need to figure out is what is a reasonable amount of work to put on
what's
people when you break them. What's right. The threshold? Because if pushing the button is essentially saying zero work, and if obviously that's a fallacy, right? Like that's just a made up thought experiment. But once you accept that as like, yeah, all you have to do is push, why wouldn't you push the button? Like you don't do any work. You push one button, you push thousands of buttons a day. What, who are you that you can't just push one button? Once you accept that as it should be a yes, in my opinion, then it's like, okay, well obviously pushing a button's made up. So like, what is the threshold that you can push people? Cause we force people to upgrade in the ecosystem all the time for security. And for those, so why is the core platform on which you depend on's maintenance and survivability and like growth not okay to force you to upgrade? That's silly.
Yeah, we had a few people complaining because we changed it. We talked about the HTTP parser. We changed the HTTP parser. And now it's, if you are actually sending malformed headers, HTTP headers,
right,
it's actually complaining and giving errors. And right, people were mad at us because we did this. Like, yeah, I'm not. And
Fedora's Twitter account on like how hard it is to parse HTTP, like his, when he goes on to tirades about it, it's like, it's gold.
Yeah, essentially. But yeah, we have to go back and talking about Fedora and HTTP. But that's an example of, we have changed something that impacts, like it's actually wrong. Like we are talking about, we are currently supporting HTTP servers that are mm-hmm. not following the spec standard, yeah, of mm-hmm. the spec of HTTP, right? So.
And they're not following it because Node allowed it, right? That's why.
Essentially, yes. So it was another one. It's there is another company that is cannot adopt Fastify because Fastify by default spits out HTTP headers lowercase.
Right.
Because it makes no sense to camel case the number of hoops that Node Core needs to do. This is so much fun. For keeping the case of the headers the same.
Oh, I know. My only contribution to Node Core, which actually the Git commit credit is Tim Caswell, because I was on a train and we needed to ship version like 0.2 like tomorrow, and I was like, Tim, just here's my commit, just commit it for me. Was add head and remove head, like those APIs in Node, because at the time the Node was in the world where like Connect was everything, but it was like, wait, like Connect always ended with a finalization of all headers, right? It was collecting all the headers in an object, and then it would call write head once at the very end. It was like, well, that's silly. Like I was writing a reverse proxy. Like I needed to do actual header modifications in my middleware layer. I was like, well, okay, those APIs, should they exist? Yes, they should exist. So all of that, those hoops, I'm intimately familiar with from, geez, like a decade ago.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think somebody, I don't know if it was you or somebody else that added the fact that it keeps the capitalization.
It was already there, I think, when I was, but I remember like there's another map inside the object. That, like,
yeah, yeah, it's an enormous amount of things. So essentially it's super slow as well because you're doing all those string manipulation for basically no good reason. So it's, again, supports global standard supports. It says it's case insensitive. So let's just pick one and just go roll with it. Okay.
Yep.
And that was what we did in Fastify. We're actually just using write head and completely wrapping it because it was the only way, sane way for us to do it. But it's I don't know. I just wanted to talk about there's all those little things,
yep,
that makes, they're very hard. I don't. It's,
yeah, I mean, it comes down to, you know, just. Really deciding, you know, Charlie, like what you said, that threshold, right? When is it okay to break somebody based on how much work we're making for them, right?
Yep. And on the ESM point, to like come back full circle, I think an interesting ecosystem to watch is going to be Skypack and what they're trying to do, because right, their entire build system and what is allowable through the build pipeline is based on the premise that it has to be ESM, right? And so that, like, if companies are able to adopt that, then there's something there to sort of just forcing that on people, because people are going to make the migration. And then how do we get together, like, putting on, I think we still run the summer program for OpenJS now, and like that is a classic use of sort of computer science students or, you know, young people who want to get into the industry. That's a really good example of how to use their time, because right, it's pretty rote, and they'll get support if they don't know it well, and pick the, let's just go with SitGIM. Everything in SitGIM, that should be ESM, right? Just as a thought experiment. Let's try and get all of that migrated next summer.
Like, right.
That would get us pretty far, because I don't care that every little thing gets migrated over, but this sort of like everything up to the beginning of the long tail, right? Like, what are those?
Right. And for the listeners who aren't familiar, SitGIM is the tool we use within in Node, Canary in the Goldmine. It's a smoke testing tool we use to see if we broke models in the ecosystem with any changes we do in Node Core. Talking about, you know, ESM, you know, still, and just kind of coming, bringing it full circle, going back to the APM vendors. There is really a valid conversation to be had about how, you know, yes, ESM breaks them. How much of that responsibility falls on Node Core to maintain versus if support for Node is important to the APM vendors, what is their responsibility for coming in and figuring out a solution that works, contributing that implementation to Node rather than just saying, Node, no, you can't change anything because it breaks us?
I actually have an interesting sort of even one layer above that argument, because I thought that's where you were going with it, which is, why isn't it their obligation to be members of TC39 and be lobbying for changes in right. import so that that is possible? Because yep. they are essentially forcing you, and by you, I mean the project, at, which they may or may not be foundation members funding the project in some right. way materially, which is its own, you know, moral quandary. But especially if they're like, no, you can't break us. You know, you're a multi-billion dollar corporation, New Relic, Elastic, trying to think of the other big ones.
You are on the New York Stock Exchange and right. you are, right. and you can buy, you know, those are the companies that we are talking about. Elastic, Datadog. Datadog is actually good because now they're contributing. Elastic stopped contributing. Google used to contribute, stopped contributing on that front.
So is it okay to break companies that aren't contributing? I mean, I'd have to argue, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, not only that, but I think the way to do it is to not sort of do the petulant child thing where, like, I'm going to, you know, throw tax in your cereal. But how do we say, we're going to do this? Again, like, sort of put on the technical product manager hat. Like, we're going to do this in 2 years. And we're doing it, and nothing's going to stop us. And or we're going to do it the moment the next stable release comes out. So give it 18 months for like a full LTS cycle. And if you want changes, you got to go lobby now with TC39, because that argument has been falling on deaf ears for some time, and which makes sense because pretty much everything in the browser, they're still bundling, even if they are using ESM for their loading. Like, the timing there and the way they do instrumentation is generally not those same APIs, because there's a whole other set of, like, I think the browser timing APIs are like WhatWig or WC3, I can't remember, but there's other APIs that are exposed to them there for APM. Since those don't exist in Node, they're using like the classic New Relic monkey patched require probably to like do stuff to the module when it comes in. And that ain't gonna work anymore. Sorry guys and gals, like, just that's the way of the world. So go participate in the vendor game and get your people on the standards bodies and, you know, make it happen, because that's your livelihood and you're going to lose all of your Node customers to somebody who does.
It doesn't work that way though, Charlie, because the problem here is that it's whoever puts in the investment, it's everybody's going to benefit from that investment. So they're going to get only a very limited first mover advantage on this.
Well, this type is of this is where, you know, vendor neutral foundations and how they engage with standards body is, you know, of value. And, you know, there's probably some, you know, conversations to be had there with folks at the OpenJS Foundation, see how they can support that, because doing that outreach, building that consensus, kind of navigating the, but if I do this, everyone benefits, so why should I do it? Yeah. Like, no, y'all need to do it, like, because otherwise everyone will break. Like, that's why these organizations exist, and is a really good example of the kinds of conversations that I would love to see surfaced at the, maybe not the board level, but like the staff level. I'm sure the staff would love to help navigate that, because it's a tricky thing to navigate for, especially as ICs is on the project, or even, I know you're both sort of leadership on the project, but like on the project versus sort of in the vendor neutral standard world, where it's like, this is going to happen, you know, get the...
Yeah, this is going to happen anyway. So the problem right now is, even if we don't put in a timeline for ESM migration, okay, most of new Node.js development is going to be ESM in a year from now. So, you know, I can show you a snippet of code. I did a demo recently, and I did a demo using Fastify and ESM and top level await. And everybody was blown away by how simple it was compared to require and so on. Like, it was significantly simpler than what they were used to write. And note that Fastify internally is all like, you support both import and it both require and import. It has all these like hoops to make it all work. But that is the type of the response that I got of, you know, it's modern, it's JavaScript, it's nice, was very big. So I am feeling that we're going to look at a mass migration to ESM in less than a year.
Yeah. And I guess my advice there is like, blog about it, write a giant blog post right now, drop everything, do that, because you need the vendors to freak out, and that's going to generate the you know, sort of thundering herd that, you know, the OpenJS folks can help shepherd and get the, you know, think fourth dimensionally, Marty, the bridge will exist in 1985, right? Like they will come if you tell them it's going to break. So you don't need to get their consensus first, because they have a monetary interest in it.
No, it makes sense. Speaking of, you know, other, you know, kind of this kind of modern, the direction things are going and stuff like that, Dino's out there. There was just new release today. They added GPU support, web GPU support, which is actually really, really fascinating. I've been interested in that for Node for a while. But the whole thing's written in, you know, actually lots of it are written in TypeScript. They're talking about moving away from TypeScript. I know you have opinions on TypeScript, and I just want to, like, what are you thinking, you know, with regards to TypeScript right now?
I mean, my classic, a lot of the folks at GoDaddy use TypeScript. It's on the surface, I think it's a fine language. One of the things that bothers me is how, like, on the language front, is how complicated it makes very simple things in JavaScript. But that's more of a, like, TS lint problem than it is a TypeScript problem, because you can write any all over the place, but it's, like, frowned upon to write any. Like, how dare you have untyped things flow through our type system, and it warns you and it yells at you, but like, it'll do it and it'll run it. So you got to get comfortable with any, in my opinion. But the reason I am so sort of skittish of going whole hog on it, so to speak, is, as I said, I'm the open governance, you know, is right up there. Like, first thing, what does the governance of the project look like? Because I've been in so many situations where it's fine today, but in 2 years, when somebody makes a decision that I have no agency to change, then I'm now stuck with a bunch of things that I have to migrate. And you'd be surprised how frequently that happens. And so when, even just looking at, like, it's funny how much some of the JSX work looks like E4X, if you're familiar with that version of ECMAScript that died on the standards body floor before they just sort of decided to ship what is today ES5. And the evolution of that governance process, the staging process, the buy-in with vendors, the engagement with the other trade groups and standards bodies. I forget exactly if WHATWIG and W3C are SDOs, or if they fall into some other regulatory, you know, bucket. But TypeScript is Microsoft, period. It's like C# was. Like, I'm sure they're very talented folks and they have the best intentions, but airbags, right? Like, the diversity, like, I'm sure they're trying to build a diverse team in sort of the you know, historically underrepresented minorities point of view, but it's still not a broad group, because you have to work at Microsoft. and you have to get hired at Microsoft to make those types of contributions. And it's even worse, and I haven't seen this transgression as much since the really big elephant in the room was handled eventually and they caved, which was decorators. And I actually don't like decorators as a feature. I think of decorators as a solution to a problem that classes introduced because they are in many ways, but it's fine. You know, look, just like promises, classes lost that battle. Like, I thought Jeremy Ashkenaz's proposal for classes was way more JavaScript-y, did not win that at all. Like, it's fine, but we have them. We're going to need decorators. But the ECMAScript decorators proposal languished for almost a year, maybe more, because there was an enormous pushback from the folks who worked on TypeScript because they had already implemented decorators and those two standards or specifications now conflicted. And so the challenge that I see that really rubs me the wrong way is when the adoption of TypeScript is used as a reason not to implement something that would benefit the JavaScript standard because it would break it or break those users. Like, if you're going to be a superset of JavaScript, that argument is, you should not be making that argument, because then you're not. Then you're an actual market force that's trying to modify the specification. And I think decorators bit them in such a way that they're a little bit more engaged and then not trying to get ahead of that process more. But I just wish we could see just that little bit of extra commitment from Microsoft in their sort of open source philosophy of put it in a standards organization. Why is it not there?
I just recently had a conversation, you know, some folks talking about, you know, their issues that they've had with NPM being run by a single commercial entity, driven by that company's commercial interests. And I pointed out, well, you've gone all in on TypeScript. Do you have the same problem there? And they stopped
and React.
We never actually thought about that.
Let's consider it. NPM, TypeScript, React. I'm sorry. I can go on, but.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't think that it is a must do, but I think that when a project reaches a certain size, that conversation has to happen. And I know in many cases, you know, for these projects, the conversations have happened, maybe fizzled, maybe got rekindled. Like, I, you know, can't really give too many details there, but especially Microsoft, going back to like full circle, like at the beginning when I was talking about how I came to be, if you look at the registration date for nojitsu.com, it is the Monday after JSConf 2009. Wow. And it's because I saw the absence of community in the .NET work that I was doing. Like, go to my GitHub profile and look all the way back to like the last oldest repos that I have. They're all C#, because I was doing, like, I think I'm GitHub user like 5,000 something. So I'm doing C#, WPF, Silverlight on GitHub 2008, 2009. And it's crickets. Like, nobody's there. And so then I went to JSConf 2009. I was like, there's actually people that want to work with me that aren't like my coworkers. This is great. That was like the tipping point for me. And so to see Microsoft go from crickets to a pretty vibrant community and engagement that they have now, like, it's great. Like, it's night and day. I'm very, you know, happy that they saw the value and, you know, made those changes. But like, now make some changes that maybe aren't in your commercial best interests. And then I'll believe that it's really sincere. So I believe it's sincere for the ICs and the people doing the work, but like, from a corporate strategy perspective, is it the appearance of openness or is it actual openness? And that, I think, putting TypeScript in some sort of standards body would make me be like, yes, it's real openness. You value that.
Right, right. Well, you know, Charlie, this has been absolutely fantastic. I think we're running up on the end of our time that we have here. It's been a great conversation. It's always great to chat with you about this stuff. We will drop some links into the show notes for some of the different projects and things we've talked about here. Charlie, if you have any links that you wanted to share, just pass them along. We'll drop them in the show notes as well.
Of course.
And you know, as always, you know, folks, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can find other places to listen to us if you go to anchor.fm/openhivejs. And as always, we thank you for listening and talk to y'all later.
Thanks, folks.